I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and do we have a fun thrill ride for you today. You know, in my ongoing quest to keep everything from being politics, I have a guest on in segment two today, a young lady who has dedicated her life to saving lives. We're going to talk to Ms. Diane Diaz. She's from West Virginia. Now, believe me, I was dying to get into a conversation with her about her state senator, but I refused. I refused to spoil that particular segment of our get-together today when we talk. I will not bring that up to her because we had a pre-conversation, and I was trying to think of what I, you know, telling her kind of where I wanted to go with the conversation, and I totally refused to bring up her senator, Joe Manchin, who is seems to be the linchpin in whether or not our country is destroyed or not, as it comes to some crazy policy. So Diane Diaz has a company called Valley Basic Life Support, and they do life support. They teach people how to do CPR, and she's really very interesting. Places I never would have thought of, even as a cop. You know, I was taught CPR all the time because we came across those events all the time. But here's a woman who's out there trying to help people learn how to save lives. So very interesting. We'll talk to her. We will, of course, talk a little bit about COVID and the shot that's going around. I still have not gotten mine, only because I am on the fence about this. I don't know. There's a lot of experts out there. You know, you're not allowed to hear from those experts. But there's a lot of experts out there that are telling you this is not good. This is not safe. This is this could be long-term effects that we have no idea exactly what could happen to us with this vaccine. It's not even really a vaccine. You know, it's called a vaccine because then it's a lot of things are covered when you call it a vaccine. But technically, it meets none of the criteria of being a vaccine. And I know it's making people feel better. You know, there's even people in my family who have recently gotten the shot, and now they're going out in the world. They haven't been out to dinner. They haven't left their house. They haven't seen people in over a year, but they got their shots, and now they're comfortable going out in the world again. So I guess if that helps them to feel comfortable, and I hope it really does provide them with some safety and some health, and I hope it really does work. But I'm just at this point, I'm not sure I want to be a guinea pig for something like that. I know I'm taking my chances getting COVID because, you know, I am in my 50s and it could kill me, you know, although I'm not really in the death timeline. Those are 65 and older, but hey, you never know. Even though I'm healthy as a horse, doesn't mean I don't have an underlying condition I don't know about and that COVID could bring it out and kill me. But as opposed to growing a third arm or having some other lifelong effect from this this vaccine or whatever you're going to call it, this shot, I don't know that I'm ready to jump into that line and get my shot. Even my father-in-law, Ted, you know, we talk about Ted all the time. He's going to be 88 years old in a couple of days, and Ted doesn't want the shot. He's like, listen, I'm healthy. I follow the rules. I protect myself as best I can. I don't know that I want this shot either, because who knows what it could do to me. So we'll talk about that for a minute or two. Have you gotten your shot, or are you doing it? Are you going to get it? I know a lot of people quietly are saying no, because it's another one of those things where if you don't wear a mask, the Karens come out and come after you. You know, you don't care about people because you won't wear a mask. Well, no, that you know, if I'm in a place where you have to wear a mask, I will, because, you know, that's the rule. You know, I'm going to follow the rule, but it doesn't mean I want to wear the mask. So I find it so funny. If you go into a restaurant here in New Jersey, and now we're at 50% capacity, so half the restaurant can be full of the normal amount of people they have. Everybody's 6 feet apart. And you have to wear your mask when you come in the door till they walk you over and sit you down at your table. Once you sit at your table, you could take your mask off. And you look around, there's people 6 feet away from you all over the place with their masks off. And the servers and the bartenders are wearing theirs, running all over, sweating. But you're sitting at your table with your mask off the whole time. You're eating, getting your food, doing it. You go to the bathroom, put the mask on, walk across the room, come back and sit down, take it off. It's like as if the COVID knows if you're sitting down, it can't get you. There's like a barrier around you if you're sitting. Because the minute you get up and walk around, now the COVID could get you. It's going to jump on you. And I don't mean to make fun of this. This is a very serious thing. I get it that it's serious. I just don't know if wearing the mask, like everyone's supposed to get the shot, is really a compliance thing. You know, they're probably going to shut the world down. You're already starting to hear about, you won't be allowed in certain places if you don't have your COVID vaccine card. Now, let me ask you, isn't that my personal medical record? Isn't that covered by HIPAA? How can people on an airline say to me, you can't fly if you don't have your COVID vaccine shot, and we have to see proof of that? Isn't that revealing my medical history? Can they ask me about anything else about my medical history to get on that plane? Why is this different? So that's my question. Is the mask about compliance? Is the shot about compliance, or is it about your health? You know, we go to church and everybody's sitting 6 feet apart, but you're not allowed to take your mask off in there. What's the difference between sitting in the church and sitting in the restaurant 6 feet apart? I don't get that. Why is that different? You know, everyone's in there. You see the old people are breathing hard. I'm breathing hard through this mask, trying to inhale. You know, because, you know, in the Catholic Church, you're standing up, you're sitting down, you're standing up, you're sitting down. It's like a workout, you know, and you some nice fresh air would be great, but you're not allowed to do it. So I don't know if that's really about compliance or if it's about your health. If it's about your health and it's real, I wish we knew that, because we don't know that. We're not allowed to know differing opinions anymore, right? Everything, you're shut down if you don't agree with the state-sponsored answer. That's the only answer that's permitted, and anything else is shut down. Social media shuts you down. You can't have an opposite opinion of the state-sponsored answer to things. Doesn't that scare anybody? Doesn't anybody listen to that and say, where have I heard this before, that only the state-sponsored information is appropriate, and if you don't follow the state-sponsored information, if you dare to say something different, you will be silenced. You will be ridiculed. In some cases, you could be arrested. How many people got arrested for opening their businesses because they didn't want to be shut down? What do you think is going to happen if you get on an airplane and, you know, you try to get on an airplane, you don't have your vaccine papers, you know? And even that in and of itself, I know lots of people are making that connection to that the old saw about, you know, when Nazi Germany was around and they would say, hey, let me see your papers. They wanted to see papers. Everybody had to show their papers to the government so that you if you didn't carry them, you were subject to arrest or worse. Aren't we doing that kind of now with this idea? You know, if you don't have your vaccine papers, you can't get on an airplane. You can't go into a hotel. You can't go to the movie theater. It just happened here, right here in New Jersey. There was a, this is Holy Week. This is a big, important week in the Christian church. And there was a priest in a parish here who said, if you don't have your COVID vaccine, you cannot go to confession, right? Mask or no mask, you can't go into the confessional if you don't have your vaccine indicator. Well, somebody complained to the bishop and you know, of course, he made them rescind that. But this is the kind of craziness that you got going on. So I'm behind a screen. We're both behind masks and I can't go in there. Why? Are we that afraid? I don't know. Well, along that line, you know, what we see today is we are seeing there's panic now. There's panic now that the fourth wave of COVID is on its way. This fourth wave could be even worse than all the ones before. They're saying the deaths are going back up again. Hospitalizations are going back up again. Is that because you can really feel it? Can't you really feel that everyone's getting sick of this lockdown nonsense and not being able to function and businesses are closed? Well, as that's starting to come to a head where people are really getting done with it, and all of a sudden the fourth wave is going to kill us. The fourth wave is going to get us and it's going to wipe us all out. And that's the end of us. There's nothing we can do. We have to lock back down. What is that all about? What is that all about? I don't know. These are questions I'm trying to figure out, because this is so different than anything else we in our lifetime have ever dealt with. You know, I'm watching a special now. It's on one of the streaming cable networks that you can buy. And it's about the Black Death, you know, back in the 1300s, 1347. And it's a series of 23-hour-long lectures by this professor from Purdue University. First of all, she's brilliant. She's really personable. She's energetic. She's fun to listen to. And she knows her subject matter. And I started watching it because, first of all, I'm very interested in history. But that pandemic, that plague, and what it did to, you know, almost half the population of Europe died in those couple of years that the plague was out there. But it's so informational because you find out that there were waves of plague. You know, there was separated by a couple hundred years. There was another outburst of plague. And they're giving us all these different insights into what the plague was, what it really was. And one of the most interesting things I found as I'm listening to this program is that this professor is telling us when they've gone and done actual exhumations, they found these mass pits because they didn't have enough grave space. So that you would have the local religious leader go out and bless a piece of land, they would dig a huge pit, put all the bodies in it, and bury them because there was so many people dying every single day all across Europe. It was just amazing that they went and they did tissue samples of whatever they could find. And they're looking at this and they're saying lots of these people died from anthrax. Now, anthrax creates blisters and boils on your body. You have breathing problems. You can die. So when you think about the bubonic plague, bubonic after the bubies, which is around your groin and your armpits, it affects your lymph nodes. You get these boils. That's why it's bubonic. That's what they call it. Well, in the 1300s, 1347, when that wave really started crushing Europe, Western Europe, were people really trying to determine if you had bubonic plague or something else? You had boils, man, and you were dying. They didn't want to go near you. There were stories that just talking to someone who had plague and you'd be dead in a few days. Lancing the boils, as disgusting as that sounds. They were trying to figure out what to do, and you would get sick from that. It was just filled with bacterium. Interesting is that to see that a lot of it was anthrax, was not bubonic plague. So did one plague lead to another? This is all very interesting to me because we are living through our own kind of a plague right now. The difference is, you know, back then you could see just piles and piles of dead people. You know, here we're hearing about the dangers, and there was a lot. I mean, 500,000 people died in the last year. That's horrific. But the other statistic that goes with that, this is our modern COVID plague, is that there are a normal number of deaths per year in our country. People who die from old age, from heart attack, from cancer, from car accidents, from death by misadventure. There's a certain number of people on average that die every year. Well, you would think with this COVID, this 500,000 people who died just of COVID, that there'd be such a gigantic spike in the average number of deaths because clearly that would be the result of COVID. So you have your average number every year. Say it's 250,000 people every year in America die from all the natural things and the car accidents and everything that kill us. Every year, there's about 250,000 of us. Now we have 500,000 COVID deaths in that same year. You would think your number of deaths would be what? 750,000, right? Simple mathematics. Even in our schools today, we could probably figure that out. But when you look at the number hasn't changed. It's still the same number of average number of deaths. Why is that? How can there be 500,000 COVID deaths and not see that number spike? I don't understand that. I wish somebody would reach out to me with that information if you understand it better. But, you know, it seems pretty simple, pretty basic. You know, where is the regular flu? I see people asking. You know, every winter we go through, you know, people that get the flu that didn't get a flu shot. Who got a flu shot? It's only working 10%. Why would I get a flu shot? It might kill you. It's a live flu. It gave me the flu. There's so much misinformation out here on all of this that it's just crazy. But people are asking, where is the regular flu? Where's the 40,000 to 60,000 people who die every year from the regular flu? I don't know anybody who had the regular flu. Everybody that's had anything had COVID. You know, they got tested, they have COVID. It's just a strange, bizarre thing that's going on. And I have to go back to the fact that we don't know the answers because we're not permitted to hear other sides of information. There is only one side. There is the state-approved story, and anyone else will be silenced, shut down, humiliated, arrested, or otherwise attacked. Is that a correct way for us to be? I don't know. I don't think it is. So I didn't want to spend so much time on the COVID, but I guess it's important for us to talk about it. Keep ourselves aware of what's going on. Keep our eyes open. And listen, nobody wants to get sick. Nobody wants to get something that could bring out some, unknown malady that you have that kills you. Of course not. Nobody would want that or happen to their family member. But doesn't it seem that we're being played again? Doesn't it seem we're being played again here? Look at Mr. Biden and his press conference. Look at the way that went compared to a Trump press conference. Now, Donald Trump walked down a gangway from a place he was speaking last year, and apparently he had regular shoes on, dress shoes, and he was trying to walk gingerly down this thing so he didn't slip and fall. Well, the media went nuts. They talked about he must have Parkinson's, he must have this, he must have all these mental conditions. There's something wrong with him that he walked like that. He's hiding something. And the guy just said he didn't want to slip and fall down the thing, and they went crazy. Here's Joe Biden, who, did you listen to some of his answers? Did you listen to how this guy trailed off?
The thing?
And he does that all the time. He did that again, where he just stared blankly at the camera. And reporters didn't jump in. They didn't say, Mr. Biden, are you okay? Afterwards, you didn't hear Joe Biden displayed lots of cognitive problems today. And we wonder, is it early onset dementia? Where was all of that? They said that about Ronald Reagan. He's got to be dementia. Look at the way Reagan sat in that meeting. He falls asleep every day. But not a word about Joe Biden, who's actually exhibiting some disturbing signs. Now, I feel bad for the man. He's a human being, right? He's our president. I'm not one of these not my president guys. I didn't vote for him. I don't think he's going to do the right thing by our country. But the fact is, he is our president. And I want the best for him. I want him to be healthy so that he can make good decisions. And not that he's just bumbling and stumbling along. But where was the press there? Where was the true answers? Where was the questions? Where was all the, Mr. President, you just trailed off into the distance and couldn't answer a question. Are you okay? Nothing. How about the crisis at the border? The kids in cages thing that we heard about Trump, that he was starving people in cages in Mexico. He was letting them starve to death, these children, him and the Mexican authorities. But now we see these, they're not in cages. They won't let anybody in there. They won't let us go look, and the media is not demanding to go. Could you imagine if Trump had said, no, you're not going in there to take a look? They would have done everything. They would have had x-rays into the building to see what's going on, but nothing with this. That is why nobody can trust what's being said, because it is so biased, so blatant. Nothing is correct anymore, and we don't know which way to turn. So is the mask and the shot, are they simply signs of compliance? That you had better comply? Are they getting us ready for something bigger? That they're kind of getting us prepared to just comply when the government speaks. Don't think your own mind or you'll be canceled. I don't know. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice. We'll be back in a minute with Diane Diaz from Valley Basic Life Support. And we'll get off this politics and COVID and sickness. And we'll talk about somebody who's trying to save lives. Somebody's doing something good. I'll be back in a minute.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together. And we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. As part of what I'm trying to do is get away from the constant every minute politics, each and every day, all we talk about here at 3 o'clock every day is politics, politics this, who's cheating, who's lying, who has no idea what they're talking about. So I'm trying to bring people on that we could talk to, learn about the world, see what else is going on out there in the middle of the politics and the COVID and, you know, everything else that's ridiculous. So today, our very special guest here on Chasing Justice is Diane Diaz from Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. And we could talk politics, I guess, about her senator, who seems to be the linchpin of letting our country be destroyed. But we'll get into that another time. But Diane is the owner, CEO, and chief administrator of everything of her company, Valley Basic Life Support. And what they do is she goes around, she teaches people, and we'll find out who she teaches, how she teaches, and what she teaches about life support, basic life support, CPR. Now, I don't know if we think about CPR all the time. It's not really important in your life until somebody you know goes down and you have to try and save them. Or if you yourself, you know, had a problem and went down, you would hope somebody around you would know something about CPR. So, Diane, welcome to Chasing Justice.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Joe.
Well, isn't that very nice of you? You know, the whole thing with training CPR, I remember when I was in the law enforcement career, we trained every year or every 2 years, we had to be recertified. And they would bring out all the dummies and, you know, we would stand over them and everybody would, you know, blow into the dummy and push the dummy. And some machines had, you know, computers in them. You could tell what you would do. And others, you know, it was just you were blowing on the dummy. What is the value of CPR in general to the public? Why is this important?
Value of CPR. Well, first of all, what CPR does, if you're only doing CPR and without use of a defibrillator, you're generally buying time. Okay, so you're dealing with cardiac arrest, heart stops, someone's not breathing, we have to buy some time. So generally, if the heart stops, it actually would need the electrical activity with the use of a defibrillator to restart it. Now and again, CPR does revive people on the spot, but it's not likely because once the heart stops, it needs that electrical activity. So what we need to do is jump in and buy time, meaning person cannot breathe, let's blow it in for them. Let's manually do it. The heart's not beating. Let's manually do it. And what we're trying to do is, period, end of story, circulate oxygenated blood to oxygenate the vital organs, save the brain so when the medics come, they have something to work with. So if you do nothing, you get nothing. If someone's not breathing and their heart stops, they're technically dead at that point. And so what you want to do is find any way to circulate oxygenated blood. And we call it pumping and blowing. We're just pumping and blowing. We're doing what they can't do for themselves to make sure that organs are viable, brain is saved so that they have a body to work with. Because in only, listen to this, 4 to 6 minutes of no oxygen to your brain cells start to die. So if you call 911, there's no way someone's going to be there in 1 to 4 minutes to be pumping and blowing. Public needs to jump in, buy some time until they get there and give them something to work with.
Well, that's a pretty noble thing for people to be doing. Now, yep. I remember when I was a cop, we would go on a call and we would, you know, we would look, listen and feel. You know, we would be looking for respirations. Mm-hmm. We'd be listening for breathing and we'd mm-hmm. be feeling for the pulse. And there's no pulse. No pulse, start CPR. Right. And I know I've been there when we're pumping on somebody, pumping and blowing, as you say, and they're alive. Their heart starts beating again. So mm-hmm. that's rare, you're saying, or is it really?
It is pretty rare, but it can happen. It depends at what point you've caught it and what the situation is, you know. And so, yeah, you can. If you get in there immediately, you can revive them that have just stopped or not completely stopped. Maybe it didn't completely stop. Maybe they were not breathing and there was a pulse that was so shallow you didn't feel it. But in any event, yeah, it's possible you can save someone with a CPR alone. But in the end, if someone comes and revives them, the medics come and you did CPR, you did save them. Because without it, we can't do anything.
Right.
And think about this. You see all these cities, people are moving in, schools are getting bigger, people are flooding into these cities, and emergency rescue never gets any bigger. They just can't get there in time. Mm-hmm. So jump in and buy some time.
In lots of municipalities like mine, we were a big municipality. We had some funding, but we had a volunteer first aid mm-hmm. corps. And mm-hmm. in the middle of the day was the worst. People were at work. You'd put out a call. Right. You know, that plectron goes off and you're waiting to see who can, first of all, get the call, then get to their vehicle, then get to right. to the emergency station to get the car, the van, and then get over to the call. You could right. be there a long time with somebody.
Right.
And it's tough. So how did you get into this? What made you start doing this?
I actually had a friend who was opening a training center and thought that I could be good with the customers and be the office manager. And I started going to classes and learning how to do it and fell in love with it. And so that company was sold. And then 7 years ago, I started my company.
And that's Valley Basic Life Support.
Valley Basic Life Support.
All right. That's amazing. And what kind of places, where do you go to, who do you teach?
We teach churches, schools, doctors, bus companies, scouts, families. A lot of people have families where their kids play together that call us. Anybody who wants to learn, that's where we go. We go to banks. We go to law offices. We're over at Marriott International 7 times a year. I mean, we're just, anybody that wants to learn can learn. But most businesses, it's not always mandatory for people to want to learn. Like construction companies need to learn. We go to the, you know, quarries here. Anyone that wants to learn.
Well, that's amazing. I would never think of that. I know I had to do it as part of my job, mm-hmm. but I would never think that all those private companies do. That's a pretty good thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah, a lot of them offer those services because here's the thing. Some of them, even that it's mandatory to do for your company or your business. Most of the testimonials you get is that something happened at home. You know, and people are like, thank God I learned that from my job because one of my family members collapsed or we were at a picnic or, and we try also to be very, you know, low pressure, high quality and affordable so that people don't have to pick and choose who gets the training. We want everybody to get the training.
Right. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Now, when I think about this, I remember it used to be, you know, what was it? You did a series of 10 or 20 pumps on the chest, and then you blew some air into them. Now
it used to be like 15 compressions to 2 breaths for adults, right, and 5 to 1 for children and infants. And now it has since gone to 30 compressions to 2 breaths for all age groups. But on the other hand, people say, I have enough hard enough time doing 15. How do you expect me to do 30? And all that's telling you is more compressions with the least amount of interruptions, because we need that constant circulation with all the stopping and the starting, because we need to prime the heart, you know, and keep the prime. So the numbers are as this: do the best compressions you can, how many you can. Rather do 15 or 20 good ones than 30 junky ones that aren't going to do anything. If you don't go deep enough to beat the heart in your tiny little hands, you're not doing anything.
Right. You're compressing the chest, you're mm-hmm. compressing the heart muscle, which is pushing the blood around. And then when it opens up, it sucks blood back in.
Right.
And you're actually being the circulation system.
Right. And the problem is that people are so afraid of doing it wrong or hurting somebody, they're not effective enough. People don't go down deep enough because they're scared. Think about pressing that sternum bone down so far. And the other problem is they're so worried about getting numbers in, they don't let the chest come back. If you don't let the chest come back, it doesn't refill. People are afraid of the breaths, or what do we do? Like we were talking earlier, and you were talking to me about breathing, and there is a compression-only CPR out there, but here's the thing. They'll never do away with the breaths. Pre-COVID, with COVID, if you're comfortable, if it's a family member, if it's a person that you know perfectly well, that is fine. And you're comfortable doing the breaths is important because we have to circulate oxygenated blood, right? Initially, somebody goes down, there's a lot of oxygen present that you can circulate without putting more in. But eventually, if someone doesn't come in a period of time, it's going to circulate out, and we need the oxygen for the vital organs and the brain. Right. So if we can do it, we do it. If we can't, then we want to do the best compressions that we can and don't stop.
Now, when you say that, I remember when they taught us, and I was out on calls, and you're doing them, and especially for like elderly people, you would mm-hmm. crack and break ribs.
You can.
You know, you'd hear them cracking and breaking, and you know, you felt bad for them, but at least, you know, they got to the hospital and they were, you know, brought back and they had a broken
rib. We can break them. And there is the thing out there that people think if you don't break something, you're not pushing hard enough. And it is not a gauge to say, I didn't break anything, push harder, but it can happen. And normally what you're breaking is a rib or an outer lying bone, which then people say, can it puncture the lung? Yes, it can. In the field, we don't know this, but we know if we stop doing compressions, then we have no circulation, and so it's a lost cause, right?
Right, and that's really what we're trying to do is give them a chance by giving some air and some blood, so you can keep them going. It's I guess when you hear people's stories and you talk to them, You must hear lots and lots of them. I know I went on a call one time when I was still in patrol in uniform, and it was, you know, probably 2 o'clock in the morning. And an elderly man, he was in his late 60s. You know, the closer I get to my 60s, that's not so old anymore. But
he was I'm past there.
At the time, he was 69 or 70. And I went to the call, and his wife had called because he had chest pain. He wasn't feeling good. And he said, I think I'm having a heart attack. And you know, he was real brave when I got there. You know, I gave him oxygen. We called the first aid. They were coming. When his wife left the room, this guy, he looks at me and he reaches out and he holds my hand. He says, Officer, I think I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it. And I said, no, you're talking to me. You're breathing. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. And the ambulance came. They took him there. And I found out he coded in the ambulance and he died. He didn't come back. But here he had a sense
right.
of that, you know. And,
right.
You know, the first aid did everything they could. You know, they did all the stuff that they needed. But sometimes it's just your time to go, I guess.
And, well, there's, but, yes. That's the whole thing. At least you tried. At least you gave them a chance. Some people live long enough to say goodbye to their families, at least. Mm-hmm. And other people make it. You know, there's a lot of people may, especially if you have a defibrillator available. That's going to be your next golden ticket.
Now, do you teach defibrillator?
Oh, yeah. With the CPR, we teach defibrillation. We teach first aid. We teach bloodborne pathogens training and basic life support for healthcare providers. Any kind of emergency preparedness.
Now, I remember when I first talked to you about this and you told me you went to doctor's offices to teach CPR. That seems that doesn't seem to make sense. You go into a doctor's office. But then again, I remembered there was somebody would be having a heart attack in the doctor's office. They call the first aid.
Right.
No, they don't do it.
Right.
So you
or you go to the dentist or you go to the doctor's office for a cold. I mean, how often do people really collapse and have a cardiac arrest in a doctor's office? They don't do it all the time unless they're an emergency room doctor. And so I used to say the same thing. I'm going to a doctor now, but sometimes I got to go, hey, doc, you got to do a little better than that before I go, you know, but they don't do it all the time either. And so, and everybody needs the practice. Everybody needs to refresh. It's a very scary thing to try to do right and try to do good. Because here's the big question of the day to know why. It's not enough to just say, oh, yay, I did the steps, yay me. We have to try to do good. And say you do CPR perfectly by the book. You're like the king of CPR. No one did it better than Lieutenant Joe. What percentage of what the heart could do for itself do you think you're replacing if you do it perfectly? Take a good guess.
50%.
23 to 27% is all you get if you do it perfect. And if no one tells you that, you don't try as hard. So you're only doing a quarter to a third of what the heart can do for itself. That's why it can buy time, but not for a long time, because we're literally just squishing the heart. It's not even beating. We're blowing minimal oxygen. So it's buying time for, you know, a short time, but, you know.
Well, it's better than laying
it's
there
working.
And having nobody.
It works. They say only right now about a 7 to 10% survival rate outside of the hospital, but it's a low percentage. But think of how many people have a cardiac arrest and how many people are 7 to 10% of those people that live. That's a lot of people.
That's amazing. And I think what you do is amazing. Now, I guess you would do this for, well, you say you do it for the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts and all
anybody.
These different groups.
Yes. Schools, so, summer camp kids, everybody.
So how would somebody, if they said, I want my company trained, I want all my employees trained, or I want my Cub Scout unit trained, you travel to them? Will you go to them? Or
we generally from here go, yes, we only do on-site training. So we go to the site. And we generally go to within a couple of hours. I have instructors in different areas. So we're in Washington, D.C. a lot. We're in Maryland a lot, Virginia, West Virginia. But it's not to say that we won't go other places or I won't go other places. So we travel to them with all of our mannequins.
How would somebody get in touch with you? How would they reach Diane Diaz at Valley Basic Life Support?
Well, they could look on our website or our Facebook page, Valley Basic Life Support, valleybls.com, or they could call my number, 540-931-3298.
Excellent.
And they would reach me. And
now,
we would come.
New parents. Here's a group I think of new parents. My son just had a baby, going to have another baby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember of all the training that you take when you're doing this, we always, you know, people fooled around. Hey, Annie, are you awake when you're hitting the tummy and you're trying to get ready? But when it came to the kids, when you're like mm-hmm. doing that little baby dummy to try and practice with that baby, I mean, everybody really paid attention because you don't want to go to a call where there's a little kid who's, choking on something or having some kind of a cardiac situation and you don't do the right thing. Right. How important is it, you think, for new parents to know these skills?
There are some places where people have kids and they're not allowed to take the kids home until they've learned it. It's very important. And I mean, you do see occasional cardiac arrest in infants, but a lot of times, you know, those cardiac arrests would be a secondary cardiac arrest that would come from a choking or a suffocation first that would lead to that if it's not really a cardiac issue that they already have. But, you know, kids are crawling around, you know, putting stuff in their mouth. And if they have a blocked airway long enough, they can go into a secondary cardiac arrest. So they should know how to do the Heimlich and they should know how to do CPR, because if they collapse after they've been choking and it didn't come out, they need to do CPR to relieve that object.
Absolutely. And you can see, baby, boom, you do that thump on the back and
that's right.
You do the sweep. You know, I remember right. all these things.
Turn them upside down, support the head and the neck. As a five parent, back blows and five chest thrusts.
Yep. As a parent coming home, saying to myself every meal, you know, remind myself, okay, we're going to have dinner now. The kid's 2 years old. What do I do if something happens? You know, it's really extremely important stuff.
People panic, especially more when it's a family member than anyone else.
Sure. So of all of these kind of things, is this outrageously expensive? I know you can't really quote prices because it depends on how many people, I guess, I would be having under every, but is it really absurdly expensive? Or is it something you can actually afford?
It's up to the individual companies. I actually tend to be lower than most. And I just try to give a fair price again so that everyone can get the training. There are some, like say for a CPR and first aid class, there's some people that charge $100 for that.
Per person.
You know, yes, for the both classes. And depending on the areas and who we're dealing with, you know, but no, it's not outrageously expensive. You know, again, it can be depending on who you deal with, but you shop around and it's not always about the money. You want to get a company that's reputable, that really cares about what they're doing, because, you know, some go in and, you know, do a refresher or just, you know, do it as a business. Most people that are doing it do care. Because it's a personal training. It's an intimate training, you know? And so,
I like your point there, Diane. I want to thank you for being on here and Chasing Justice with us. It is a personal thing. What's more important than saving somebody's life and, you know, pumping on their chest and blowing air down their lungs to keep them alive? So listen, everybody, if you need the training, if you have a question, it's Valley Basic Life Support. You find Diane on the web. You can find her on Facebook, on the internet. If you have any questions, reach out. I'm sure I could tell she seems like a very nice person. She'd want to help you. So this is Lieutenant Joe. I told you to bring your real people here for a while instead of all this politics. We'll get to her senator at another time. We'll be back in a minute with round three here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world. Featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
All right, then, we're back here on Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. You know, as I go through this afternoons, I like to spend time with everybody out there, and I like to think about what's going on and look at the news and see how is it affecting our lives. I tell you, in the last segment, we met Diane Diaz, and I think that's amazing. I had no idea that so many companies would get their people trained. You know, I would hope that if I fell down somewhere, if I had some kind of problem, that somebody would know CPR. So she's out there teaching and training people. So she's a wonderful person, and I was thrilled that she came on and spent some time with us this afternoon and help us get our mind off the craziness. But the Valley Basic Life Support, and no, she's not paying me a fee to say that. I'm amazed when somebody's out there on their own trying to do the right thing. So I thought she was great. Diane, thank you for being on, and we'll catch up with you again down the road. Now I'm looking to say, okay, what else can be going on? We talked in the first segment about signs of compliance, whether we're being compliant or not. Let's look at some of the big things that are going on now. The Derek Chauvin trial. You know, the George Floyd situation in Minnesota. Now, as a law enforcement officer, I have to tell you, I watched the same 9.5-minute video that everyone else did, and I hated how it looked. I really did. Let me strike that. Not that I hated how it looked. I hated how it felt. You know, I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody that I know. You know, somebody who I know. I wouldn't want them to have somebody leaning on them. But is that what killed him? Now, this is the question that can get you in a lot of trouble, because remember, just like the mask and the shot, you better comply. The story here is that he was choked to death, right? Mr. Floyd was choked to death by that officer, and the other officers did nothing as he was choked to death, except when you see, and you know, we've seen it as it's been released, is the autopsy, where the medical examiner says no indication of any damage to his throat, windpipe, or anything like that. No sign of choking. And he had enough fentanyl in his body to kill several people. Does that matter? Does that matter, or does the narrative matter that this cop killed this guy? And because it looked so horrible, we just got to go, yeah, he killed him. So I find it interesting that he was originally indicted on some charges, including third-degree homicide. Now, third-degree homicide, and they break them down for people who don't understand how this goes. You know, you have, like, murder one. Murder one means intentionally, purposefully, and knowingly taking someone's life, killing them. A murder for hire, a murder for money, a murder for passion, because you're jealousy, and you make a plan, premeditated, and you go there and kill someone. That's murder one, first degree murder. That's usually a death penalty thing because you thought about it, you planned it, and you went and did it. And then you have the lesser kind of homicides, not lesser in the impact it has on the person and the family because they're obviously dead and that's terrible, but lesser in the eyes of the law is your culpability. So if you did not plan on killing someone and you had what they call a crime of passion, say you come home one night, you come home early, and your wife is engaged in physical activity with someone who is not you. And you lose your mind in jealousy and rage, and you start screaming and hollering, and there's a fight, and you kill this person. Still a homicide. You know, the manner of death is, you know, someone was killed by another person. But was your intent to murder them, or was it a crime of passion? That's usually murder too. That's some kind of a manslaughter. That's where you did not purposely intend to kill them. You had no plan, or put it that way. And they ended up dead. Then you have the other kind of manslaughters, number three. Like, you go to a bar fight. You go to a bar and you're having cocktails and some guy shoves you. You shove him back. He swings at you. You swing. You get a better shot. Hit him in the chin. He falls down and hits his head on the floor and busts his skull and dies. That happens all the time. That kind of stupidity leads to death all the time. But there was absolutely no intent on the part of the person who did it, but you're still responsible for taking the action that led to that person hitting their head and dying. So that would be like a manslaughter, third degree kind of a death. Now, for everybody out there who's in all these different states that listen, and you're comparing your law to what I'm saying, I'm giving a generalization here so people understand, why isn't it murder one? Because it goes to my story about what's happening in Minnesota. All right, so you got the three different kinds. Purposeful, knowing, murder, when you go out and choose to go kill somebody. Number two, when you kill somebody in the heat of the moment, maybe negligently. Maybe you should have known swinging a golf club at somebody's head would kill them, even if you're enraged. And then number three, you had no intent to kill somebody, but your actions led to their death one way or another. All right? There's different jail sentences that can go with that. Murder one, You can face the death penalty in states that have the death penalty, or life without parole. It means you go to jail, you stay there forever and ever. For murder too, which is usually a manslaughter-related type of thing, you might get the sentence from 8 to 15 years, or 8 to 20 years, or 10 to 20. So in that range, you know, 20 years of your life, not a full 30, or for the rest of your life. So it's number two. And number three could be, you know, 7 to 15 years. You know, you killed somebody inadvertently, you didn't have any plan to do it, it's just that's what happened, manslaughter. You did something, somebody ended up dead. All right, so that might be 7 to 15 years. Well, initially, I believe they indicted Officer Chauvin and the other officers. They included third-degree murder, and then they dismissed it. Why would they dismiss a charge? Well, you got to look at the fervor that was going on in the country when this happened. I think everyone that has a heart and a soul had to feel bad for George Floyd and his family, that this man ended up dead. All right? Absolutely terrible. And there was such anger. You know, we saw riots across the country. We saw people burning, looting, venting their anger and their outrage at this. Right, wrong, or indifferent. That's what was going on. And they dropped the third degree homicide. Well, recently, as they're getting ready for trial, they petitioned the court to bring that charge back. So why would you bring back such a minor charge compared to murder one or murder two? Why would you bring back that murder three? Well, let's think about that. Why would somebody do that? Well, here's my theory. I think because public sentiment should have nothing to do with how our courts work. Our courts act on rule of law and a sense of justice. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty, even if we all think he did it. We have to go through the trial, and everyone is entitled to a defense to make their case. And also, everything that we think we know, we don't always know. When did you hear that the autopsy showed there was no damage to Mr. Floyd's throat? Now, if they kneeled on him until and choked him out with the officer's knee, wouldn't there be indications of that? Wouldn't there be indications of damage to his throat, to his neck, all these other areas? Well, of course there would be. But there are none. What they're showing is that the fentanyl brought on by the struggle with the officers led to his body to collapse and he died. Now, he still died in police custody. It's still a terrible thing. It's terrible for him, terrible for the officers, terrible for the community, terrible for everybody. But was there a willing and knowing attempt to murder Mr. Floyd? Well, some people who don't understand the degrees and the differences will say yes. You know, they're big bad cops and they just wanted to kill this man because, you know, that's what cops do. They go out and kill people for no reasons. Some people actually believe that. So you know that it's not murder one, especially when that evidence comes in. Because no matter how outraged everyone is, no matter how upset everyone is, when it comes to a court of law, if it's not a faked up court, not a court like our Congress runs where they lie and, you know, fake up evidence and everybody's supposed to believe it. In a real court of law with a real judge and a real jury, each thing is going to be taken apart and looked at. There is case law that dictates what can be said, what can't be said, what evidence can come in, what evidence can't come in. There's going to be medical experts, not just the public who saw that horrible video and say, that's murder. They killed him. They got to go to jail and be, you know, burned at the stake, whatever we're going to do to them. When they start to look at the facts of the case, I think it becomes clear that as tragic and as horrible as it is for Mr. Floyd and his family, and for the whole community, for our whole country, to see anyone, another American, who dies under those circumstances. That's terrible for all of us. But we'd have to be clear about the fact that the officer's intent was not to murder Mr. Floyd. Right? So that's not murder one. That's out. They know they're not going to get that. And then murder two, which they tacked on because they figured, in case there's no chance with murder one, at least we get a murder two. That's, you know, manslaughter with knowledge. And you're still going to get a very serious charge. You go to prison for a long time. Lots of problems for the officer. And then I think as they started looking at it, and we didn't hear. When did we get that autopsy report? Not too long ago, right? We just got that information. This happened a year ago in May. Well, almost a year ago. In May of 2020 is when this incident took place. Why did we not find out about the autopsy? Why did they not report it? Why didn't that information come out? Would that have calmed everyone down to realize that this might be Now, you realize that word? Everyone say the word with me. I'm going to spell it. M-I-G-H-T. Might be a really unprofessional arrest and treatment of another human being and a drug overdose that killed him. That's what it might be, right? We don't know. We only saw a video and we were told what happened. Our own visceral response to watching that made us all cringe and be angry with that officer, right? That's what we all saw. But that doesn't mean that is what happened, right? So I think what we have to do is pay attention to the trial as it goes forward. What exactly is the evidence as the evidence comes out, right? Is it really a case of murder? So I don't think they have murder one. Do they have murder two? I think they're looking at that and they're saying, wait a minute. First of all, you may not like the cop. Does anybody really know this cop? No, we heard reports about him. We heard reports about, you know, what this guy's supposed to be like, but nobody knows him unless you know him personally. So I think they're looking at their case and they're saying, okay, now the public knows about this fentanyl. They know that there's no injury to his neck, which that kind of really gets rid of the whole, you know, choking someone to death thing. So I don't know if we're going to get murder too. If we don't convict these officers on something, I think they're concerned that there'll be massive civil unrest across the country. So I think what they did is they went back to the court and they petitioned to bring back that third degree homicide charge, that manslaughter charge, that basically you did something and because of the circumstances somebody ended up dead, that they can present that to the jury. And even a jury who's concerned for their safety, as we know, how long did it take to pick the jury? Because people are getting death threats. They're afraid their houses will be burned down. They'll be attacked if they don't find someone guilty, which that's great justice, isn't it, for all of us? To know that a mob is going to determine whether or not justice is played out. And we don't know that that's going to happen either, but we know there was threats. We know that a lot of the jurors were scared to death, the potential jurors, that they were going to be harmed or injured if they didn't vote the right way. They didn't comply. See what I'm saying? So I think they brought that back. They petitioned the court. And the court looked at it and said, okay, you want to bring it back? You can bring it back. Now third degree homicide is one of the charges that they can certainly find the officer or officers guilty of. So this way they'll have a conviction. And hopefully that'll prevent, rioting and burning and killing and people venting their anger in the streets and really hurting their community and even worse. That's my theory. That's why I think that happened. Now, let's ask the uncomfortable questions. If it's not murder one and it's not murder two, and it turns out that the officer was unprofessional, and I hate to say it like that, but didn't act in a professional manner, didn't give enough concern for Mr. Floyd, who was saying he couldn't breathe. Now, obviously, if you can say you can breathe, you can't breathe, you're breathing. And for him to say it, what did they say, 23 times, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. He started saying that in the back of the car, right, that he couldn't breathe. Well, the experts are saying that's probably because of the result of the fentanyl. Fentanyl is like an opiate, like a heroin. And one of the things heroin does is shuts your breathing down, right? That's how people die from it. So maybe that's what was happening to him because they're saying he had a lot of fentanyl in his body, right? He had taken a lot of fentanyl, enough to kill someone. Do you see that? The inconvenience of that. It doesn't fit the narrative of what everybody saw and thought they knew. Now, more evidence might come out to indicate that absolutely this was a homicide, an intentional murder or something. The officer could say something. Somebody could testify. He said the day before, I'm going out to kill somebody tomorrow, and I don't know who it is going to be, but I'm going to do whatever. We don't know what the evidence is going to show, but we do know that there's conflicting stories here, and there's only one line that you're permitted to take, and that is Derek Chauvin is a racist cop who wanted to kill George Floyd. Anything other than that is suspect, and the person who says it is suspect, because you must secretly be a hater like that officer, right? Is that justice for any of us? Now, when it's our side and we feel that way, we have those feelings, then it's easy to go along with that and go, yeah, that's right. We all saw it. We all saw it. It was all murder. We saw it. We saw it. And now they're going to get away with it because, you know, people let people get away with things if they're in certain groups. Is that true? Is that justice? So let's break that down. Is it true that some people get away with things other people wouldn't? Yes, it's absolutely true. There's no doubt about that. How come Hillary Clinton broke all those laws with her phones and her emails? If you got a subpoena from the federal government to bring in your emails and you decided to go through them and delete the ones you didn't want them to see, you'd be in prison. So Hillary didn't go to jail. She didn't even get arrested. How about James Comey and all of those people in the government who committed a coup d'etat against a candidate for the presidency? Whatever happened to Durham? Didn't we have an investigation supposed to come out? What happened to that? Where'd that go? I don't know. All those laws that were obviously broken. Nobody's being held to account for that. So there absolutely is some people that will get away with things no matter what, and other people would be held to account. So let's look at it this way. You and me would be held to account. We're not those people, right? Our society doesn't have blind justice as it's supposed to. There is political stuff that goes on. So is it possible that you could have a jury that would say, I don't care what the evidence is, I'm going to find these officers not guilty? All it takes is one person to decide, I'm not going to find him guilty. I don't think it's murder. I don't think he did anything wrong. Do you know that the training manual for that police department talks about using your knee and your leg to control someone's head? Well, how can that be? We just watched him do it and they want to put him on trial for murder. Well, maybe he did it wrong. Maybe he did it too much. Maybe he didn't show compassion. Maybe it didn't fit the narrative of what we want to say about police officers in this day and age. I don't know. It's a tragedy that Mr. Floyd is dead, that his family suffered that loss. He lost his life. It's a tragedy for our whole country that we saw that violence outpouring into the street. And now we're seeing a trial where we may or may not see justice. We may or may not see justice after the trial. We may see more violence. We may see more of a breakdown of our society. But wouldn't it be helpful if somebody would come forward and talk about this honestly and truthfully and try and make everyone, give everyone the information so they could see things for as they really are, not as they think they are or how they want them to be. So I guess that's really the theme of our whole show today, other than, you know, Diane Diaz, who was very nice. Compliance. Are we all supposed to comply, believe the right things, think the right things, and then act accordingly? Dissent in any way will not be tolerated. I don't know, my friends. We're searching for justice here. We're always seeking the truth. And I want you to think about those things. Because in the days and weeks ahead, it's going to get tougher and tougher to be able to tell between the two. So this is Lieutenant Joe signing off from Chasing Justice Land here on the America Out Loud Radio Network, saying, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you down the road.